Well, welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairyman. We are broadcasting from the Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, at the historic W.D. Horton Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin's 16th governor, William Dempster Hord, who also founded Hordes Dairyman. Our conversation today will focus on new Congress, new legislation. This will be a dynamic discussion given the political arena and the need for 15 votes to select the next Speaker of the House of Representatives in the 118th Congress. To delve deep into these issues, I'm pleased to have four outstanding thought leaders. And based on our dress rehearsal yesterday, we'll have a diverse discussion on this topic. As a reminder to everyone in our audience, we will this webcast will be available on the Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel 24 hours after the live event. Dairy Livestream is also available anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Simply search for Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone to download it. As you hear from our panelists, please submit your questions into the GoToWebinar question panel. The earlier you ask a question, the more likely it will get asked on the air. Let's get rolling with the conversation, new Congress, and new legislation. Before we hear from our leadoff speaker, Charlie Garrison, let's go to a poll question. This is for audience participation. Pick one. What is the balance in the U.S. Senate? So we just seated the U.S. Senate, 49 Republicans and 51 in the Democratic caucus, and even 50-50 split. 51 in the Democratic caucus and 49 Republicans are none of the above. So this is a little bit of a civics test, but it's also very important when it comes to discussing what might the future hold for dairy on the legislative front. So we have a lot of people rapidly voting here. We'll give you another 10 seconds to cast your ballot on this first poll question. And we'll have poll questions before every speaker to kind of stir the drink here in the conversation. So Caitlin, let's see what the audience had to say. Well, 52% of you got it correct. There's 51 in the Democratic caucus and 49 Republicans. So as we transition from the 117th to the newly seated 118th Congress, margins remain razor thin, and moving legislation forward will be a challenging proposition. We welcome Charlie Garrison to Dairy Livestream. After graduating from Purdue, this Indiana dairy farmer later went on to work for Dairy Management Inc., or what many of us know as DMI. There he served as Director of Industry Relations. In 1997, Charlie forged out on his own and started the Garrison Group, where he serves as president. Charlie represents a number of dairy farm clients on Capitol Hill, including the Idaho Dairymen's Association, National All Jersey, the Southeast Dairy Farmers Association, and has partnered with the National Milk Producers Federation on multiple projects. Charlie, the legislative landscape, not to mention the regulatory landscape, will be very interesting in the next 2 years. As a seasoned veteran in these endeavors, what do you see?
Well, thanks, Corey, and I appreciate the chance to be with everybody here this afternoon or this morning for most of the country. But I'll kick it off by saying, you know, we've got both a legislative and regulatory agenda looking at 2023 as we get started with this year. We've got a new farm bill due this year, but we also have various folks in the industry looking for regulatory changes to the federal order program. That we'll want to keep at USDA if we possibly can, but I know some of the other folks on the panel today are going to talk more about those changes. We obviously still have the very serious labor shortage facing the dairy industry. We'd like to try to continue doing something about that, although the political climate did not improve for us over the course of the midterm elections and the start of this new Congress. Obviously, international trade remains extremely important for dairy farmers and dairy processors. From a demand standpoint, the overseas markets are more and more critical for us. I want to talk a little bit about those midterm election outcomes And then also looking forward to the 2024 elections and what that all means for farm policy. As far as legislation is concerned, Farm Bill is the most prominent thing with agriculture, obviously, this year. The current Farm Bill does expire on September 30th. I don't believe that the Congress is likely to let the Farm Bill expire, because that sends spending through the roof, for one thing, spending on nutrition assistance, for example, because of the way commodities would be priced going forward. So we've got two choices, really, is a new Farm Bill or extending the current one, since we just don't let Farm Bills expire because of that spending consideration. And we've got those federal order reforms that a lot of folks in the industry are requesting. There is a piece of that that Congress must act on. And I think the Congress will want to take that up as part of the Farm Bill. And what we do about that, if we can't get a Farm Bill going forward, a new Farm Bill, then we're going to have to talk about that as an industry about what the options are. As far as the Farm Bill is concerned, the economic safety net, a big part of that for farmers. As far as dairy margin coverage program is concerned, I think you'll have folks looking at improving the no-cost coverage that is available. And I think also you'll see requests to raise the coverage volumes that are allowed in that program. Then also critical for dairy farmers are conservation programs. The EQIP program remains extremely oversubscribed. We have been able to hold the funding that's been authorized in the EQIP program, which has been very helpful to dairy producers since we've been able to stop the annual decreases to that program. So we need to increase the funding, or at least hold what we have right now, and keep the 50% emphasis on livestock agriculture that's written into that program. And obviously, dairy farmers with cropping operations can benefit from the Conservation Security Program as well. I think as we move forward, a lot of people are expecting that we'll have a climate title for the first time in this Farm Bill. It's important to make sure that carbon can be a commodity that farmers can monetize. Also going forward, it's important that any regulations be voluntary. It can't be seen as a price of admission for producing milk in the country. It has to be affordable for farmers, needs to be science-based and effective, and with the Department of Agriculture in charge, certainly the preference of the industry. Moving forward on potential for ag labor, again, we fell just short of getting something in the omnibus appropriations bill just before the holidays. Just could not get enough of agriculture employer groups on board with what Senator Bennett from Colorado was proposing. But the challenge remains, and we will have to find a way to try to address this on behalf of dairy producers going forward. And then I mentioned before, trade is a huge consideration. We'd like to see a little more emphasis on trade initiatives, new trade agreements from the administration, but appreciate the administration's efforts on compliance with agreements that we have out there. That's going to be very important. Midterm election results, Republicans did take the House by the slimmest of possible margins. Democrats kept control of the Senate. They did outperform the expectations going into the midterms, especially in the House of Representatives. I think that the 51-49 margin in the Senate now, it certainly will reduce the need for Vice President Kamala Harris to be present in the Senate to break tie votes. I think the U.S. Senate now probably moves more into the mode of being a check on the House Republican agenda. Now, then the House, the Republicans trying to exercise the majority. We did see in the battle for Speaker significant changes to the rules for governing the House. The motion to vacate the chair has been returned to any single member of the House of Representatives can basically demand a vote on whether the current speaker remains. But I think an even bigger change, and one we're going to see very impactful on the farm bill, is that you have at least three seats on the Rules Committee directed toward budget hawks, if you will. And the House Rules Committee, that's really the way the House of Representatives functions. It's very difficult to take bills to the floor with quote unquote open rules where any amendments are allowed. So the Rules Committee is extremely important for the functioning of the House of Representatives. And that was a pretty significant change that we saw there. I think that's going to have implications for the farm bill going forward, especially the split Congress is going to have to agree here. Can the parties agree to compromise? SNAP spending is going to be a major issue in the farm bill, and I know Barbara's going to talk about more of that going forward. Conservation programs, maintaining that funding that I mentioned before. Climate title, where is the money going to come from if we're going to have new climate initiatives? Then looking ahead to 2024, the White House is, they've got a very bold proposal now to change the early primary calendar. That's going to change the calculation if they can get that through, change the calculation for nominations. The House Republicans agenda, already talked about that a little bit. Also looking forward to 2024, you have a big disparity in the number of Senate seats that the parties will be defending. Remember 2018, big gains for Democrats in both the House and the Senate in the midterms in 2018. So that class in the Senate is up in 2024. You have the Senate's, the Democrats defending 23 seats to only 10 for Republicans. And then just a few closing remarks here. As far as the farm bill is concerned, as with all legislation between now and 2024, the politics are going to be very difficult here, I think, and challenging for us. We still have to have 218 votes in the House to get something passed. Anything is going to require 60 votes in the Senate, and then it has to be a bill that a President Biden would sign. So I think that those are the big challenges that I see for farm bill, big picture challenges I see for farm bill going forward. Look forward to taking questions when we're ready for that.
Thank you, Charlie. And before hearing from Dave Carlin, let's go to another poll question. The poll question goes like this: which Senate Ag Committee chair will work on her final farm bill in the 118th Congress? These are all current senators: Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Joni Ernst, Senator Deb Fischer, or Senator Debbie Stabenow. And veteran leadership can help overcome some of the issues that Charlie raised. So this is an important matter here right now. And in the House of Representatives, just a few years ago, we saw a very veteran person and Representative Peterson lose his seat in a home race, so he no longer could chair the House committee. So let's see what the audience has. 75% of you got it right. That is Senator Debbie Stabenow, who became the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate from the state of Michigan in 2000. In 2011, Senator Stabenow became Chairwoman Stabenow when she chaired the Senate Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry. After Republicans took majority control of the Senate in 2015, Senator Stabenow served as ranking member until 2021 when she returned to the role of chair. In early January, Senator Stabenow said she would not seek re-election, making this her final term in Congress. Our next Dairy Livestream panelists will shed some light as to the potential opportunities of passing legislation, regulatory action, and sorting through and further resolving some of the supply chain issues that were exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, we can get products we can get products from farm to processor, we still got to get them to consumers in the U.S. and around the globe. David Carlin has been examining and providing strategic perspective on dairy markets for nearly four decades. This Kansas dairy farm boy eventually earned his law degree from Harvard University. Years later, he served as Assistant Secretary for Congressional Relations under President Bill Clinton. After working nearly 26 years in a private sector as a lawyer for a public law and policy firm, Dave returned to his dairy roots by joining the International Dairy Foods Association as Senior Vice President of Legislative Affairs and Economic Policy. Dave, we look forward to hearing your thoughts on how the next 2 years may play out for dairy.
Thanks, Corey, and it's great to be back with you today. Charlie touched on a number of issues that are important to both dairy producers and processors, including the importance of new trade agreements for industry, as well as immigration reform that would make it easier for both producers and processors to hire the workers they need. I'm going to start by focusing on the new farm bill, which, as Charlie noted already, is high up on the congressional agenda. It really wasn't that long ago that farm bills were viewed as relatively non-controversial in Congress, and we routinely passed those with bipartisan congressional support on both sides. That was largely because we had rural Republican members of Congress who supported the commodity programs. And then we also packaged the bill with a nutrition title, which was important to urban, primarily Democratic members who had a vested interest in the SNAP program, because many of their constituents participated in that program. However, over the last couple of decades, the willingness of these diverse groups of members to come together and pass a farm bill has eroded. And we saw that in 2008, when the farm bill took more than a year to enact and was complicated by non-ag provisions that were inserted by other committees in Congress. So we had temporary extensions and two presidential vetoes of that bill before it was ultimately enacted. The 2014 farm bill took more than 21 months from introduction to enactment and spanned two different Congresses. And while the current farm bill, the 2018 farm bill, only took 8 months to get across the finish line, it got off to a very rocky start when every Democrat and 30 Republicans voted it down on the House floor. So as we're heading into 2023, there are a number of policy challenges facing Congress as it begins to look at the next farm bill, which, by the way, will be the first farm bill that comes in at a $1 trillion price tag in history. So $1 trillion farm bill, first time we've had that. On the Republican side, one of the largest internal caucuses that they have in the House, the Republican Study Committee, has already called for large funding cuts to the crop insurance program and commodity programs. And the overall farm bill baseline or budget for the farm bill has not yet been determined, but we're also going to have to probably accommodate a new federal disaster relief program in the bill that will address the growing number of droughts and wildfires and floods and other disasters that are affecting ag production. On the Democratic side, the Biden administration and other stakeholders are going to be pushing Congress to revamp existing conservation programs, make sure they do more to incent farmers to improve their sustainability practices. And with respect to the SNAP program, it seems likely that the newly elected House Republican majority will make another attempt to strengthen SNAP work requirements in the next farm bill. So with that background, let me give you a little overview of our organization's top priorities for the next farm bill. First and foremost, we want to expand a pilot program that was put in place in 2018 to encourage SNAP households to use their SNAP benefits to purchase dairy products. It's called the Healthy Fluid Milk Incentives Projects, and it's similar to a program that's already been in place for a couple of farm bills now for fruits and vegetables. And what it does is it gives gives SNAP participants a dollar-for-dollar coupon or rebate whenever they purchase a qualifying fluid milk product to use to purchase other dairy products in the grocery store. We've been working with the Baylor Collaborative on Hunger and Poverty and the Auburn University of Hunger Solutions to administer this program since it was launched in early 2020. We have pilots underway in Texas, New Jersey, and we've got 116 more pilots going live this month in Alabama, California, Georgia, and South Dakota. So we've seen a lot of interest in this program at the retail level, and we're just now, I think, getting to the point where it can make a meaningful difference at the pilot stage for more SNAP families. Based on what we've seen so far in the pilots, we think this program deserves to be made permanent, And we think that we should expand the number of qualifying dairy products that are eligible to participate. Right now, Congress limits it to 1% in skim unflavored milk products. That's too bad because 80% of what consumers buy in the grocery store is whole milk and 2% milk. So let's give the consumers what they want. Those are nutritious dairy products too. And by the way, we should add cheese and yogurt as well. And let's let those dairy products qualify for this program. So we're going to be working to do that in the next Farm Bill. Another program we need to reauthorize, or better yet, make permanent, is the Dairy Forward Pricing Program. That's a Farm Bill program that's been in place for two Farm Bills now. And it allows producers to voluntarily enter into contracts with handlers for class two, three, and four products. So that's something that's been in place. People use it, particularly in the food service industry, to stabilize pricing. But the program authority expires at the end of September. So we need to extend that program, or better yet, make it permanent to make it more usable for participants in our industry. So we'll be working on that as well. And finally, I want to just briefly mention another reform that we hope to achieve in the Farm Bill, and that's to provide USDA with the authority to conduct regular cost of processing studies. Now, what is that? That's the study that goes into determining what it costs to produce the four dairy commodities that are part of the federal milk marketing order prices. And that's cheddar cheese, butter dry whey, and non-fat dry milk. These surveys are done episodically, sporadically. Really, we've only had two since the year 2000, the most recent one being completed this last year. But without a survey, you can't make adjustments to the make allowance. And so the current make allowance formulas are based on prices, or on cost information, I should say, that was in place in 2007 and 2008. That's way out of whack, especially considering the inflationary pressures of the last couple of years and the supply chain challenges as well. So we want to give USDA the authority to conduct regular cost of processing studies so that we have more regular updates to these numbers, so that we don't have a challenge every 15 years of trying to swallow a bigger number than we'd like to. If we do this more often and more frequently, it'll be easier for everybody to manage. So I think this is the kind of thing that producers and processors can unite behind. National Milk is also supportive of doing this. So we're hopeful and optimistic that we can get USDA support this. USDA supports it as well. We're hopeful that Congress will support it, included in the next Farm Bill. Corey touched on supply chain. I just want to mention briefly a couple of the challenges there that we're facing as an industry. Last year, the port situation for exports of dairy products got a lot of attention, and Congress actually did come together in a bipartisan way to pass legislation to alleviate some of the congestion challenges in the ports. It's called the Ocean Shipping Reform Act. It's currently being implemented by the Maritime Commission. And we're going to work really hard to make sure that that's implemented correctly to try and, you know, continue to improve the supply chain challenges in the ports. We need to do something similar to this Congress in the railroad area. We don't have a lot of dairy products that travel on rail, but we do have a significant percentage that do. And we need to make some improvements there to address some challenges that we currently face in the rail supply chain. And finally, we have been working, and a lot of people across the food and ag industry have been working for years now to get our trucking sector modernized and improved so that we have a more efficient way of getting our products to grocery stores. Right now, the gross vehicle truck weight has not been changed in decades, and it's higher on state roads than it's allowed to be on interstate highways, which is ridiculous. If we can raise that number to a more meaningful number, we'll have fewer trucks on the road, it'll still be safe, and we'll be able to more efficiently transport our products. The other thing we got to do is try to take steps to address the current driver shortage. The commercial truck driver shortage is real, and it continues to plague our members and others who are part of our industry. We need to make it easier for individuals who are interested in getting a commercial driver's license to access that license. So we're gonna be working with Congress this year to try to address both of those areas as we can. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Corey, and I look forward to answering your questions later on in the program.
Thank you, Dave. And a reminder to our audience, as you hear from Dave and Charlie and soon Barbara and Andy, there's a portal in the GoToWebinar control panel. Just go ahead and ask your questions, and that's how we'll get those your questions answered on the air. Before hearing from Barbara Patterson, let's go to another poll question. This is the third straight Congress with a new House Ag Committee chair. Who is the chair? Representative Conway, Representative Peterson, Representative Scott, or Representative Thompson? Go ahead and answer that question. And our audience is doing quite well here. I can see the percentages in the back of this here as one of the producers of the show. And we'll talk through this here real shortly. So let's go ahead and see what the audience had to say on this one. And the correct, we're going to leave this on the screen for just a second here. The correct answer is Representative G.T. Thompson, a Republican from Pennsylvania who is well versed on dairy issues. The four representatives shown on the screen are the four most recent chairs of the House Committee on Agriculture, with Conway serving as a Republican from Texas, Peterson as a representative from a Democratic representative from Minnesota, and most recently Scott, a Democrat from Georgia, who is the ranking member on the House Ag Committee now in the new 118th Congress. So now we welcome Barbara Patterson to Dairy Livestream. Barbara is a graduate from the University of Michigan in Tufts University's Program on Nutrition Science and Policy, and she first worked as an intern for U.S. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida. After serving as a policy associate for the New England Farmers Union and later the National Farm to School Network, Barbara joined the National Farmers Union, where she held the roles of government relations representative and government relations director. In 2018, Barbara joined the Tory Advisory Group as director of government affairs, and 2 years later became vice president at Tory Advisory Group, where they worked together on all things food and agriculture. Barbara is extremely well-versed on nutrition matters, and it's important as nearly 75% of the farm bill goes to nutrition and anti-hunger endeavors. Barbara, thanks for joining us on Dairy Livestream, and we look forward to your insight on both legislation and regulations on the nutrition front for dairy.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Thought I would start out big picture and kind of set the stage for where we're at heading into this congressional year, but also talking a little bit about the regulatory agenda. And I'll focus a bit on nutrition, but of course what it means for the industry. Heading into this year, we saw in the fall a White House conference on nutrition, hunger, and health that brought together a lot of resources focused on issues around public health and nutrition and hunger issues as well. We've also seen in a somewhat diversion from general practice, but we've seen the Senate Ag Committee Subcommittee on Nutrition hold hearings specifically on nutrition. So irrespective of the component that's in the Farm Bill around the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, but really focused on diet-related diseases, the food supply chain, and nutrition and public health outcomes. There is a tremendous focus on public health as we're coming out of COVID, and that very much intersects with nutrition and food and conversations around food as medicine. And in addition to that, we've also seen over the last couple of years on kind of the spending side and the dynamic heading into the Farm Bill, we've seen a tremendous increase in resources going to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. And that was for a couple of reasons, displacement of employees during COVID, so lots of people laid off, more people were participating in the program. Congress also took action to approve emergency allotments, which increased the resources that were provided to each individual participant or family. And then we saw Congress take action, or we saw USDA take action that Congress directed in the last Farm Bill to update what's known as the Thrifty Food Plan. The Thrifty Food Plan is the basis by which they calculate SNAP benefits. So Congress doesn't say how much each participant should get in SNAP. It's based on a calculation that evaluates the economics, but also nutrition value of what sort of a basket of food would look like, and then base the benefit levels on that. That was about a 20% increase, just the Thrifty Food Plan update component of that, to what SNAP participants received. And so with that, we're heading into this year with a really big focus on the cost of SNAP. We typically see this happen in after there have been increases in the expenditures for SNAP. And I don't think this year will be any different, where there will be a focus on on where SNAP resources are targeted on eligibility, which is what really Congress has a say in, and that dynamic heading into the Farm Bill. So big picture, this is, the SNAP component is included with the regular farm programs and crop insurance in this omnibus legislation. And then the last couple of farm bills, we've seen SNAP really be the target for reforms, which have created challenging dynamics to get the farm bill across the finish line for some of the reasons that we've the previous Charlie and Dave have mentioned, that we have a split Congress and we have a Democrat president, and so there has to be a bipartisan effort to get the farm bill done. And there have already been signals around making cuts to SNAP or increasing work requirements or some of the things that are red lines in the sand for Democrats. And so it's setting up this dynamic where you're heading into the farm bill with the first $1 trillion farm bill. And SNAP is the major component of that. You're seeing some review of how the Thrifty Food Plan update was done, and this push towards austerity and how can we make cuts to overall federal spending. So heading into the Farm Bill, we're looking at legislative activity on what the impacts to SNAP will be. In February, we'll see the last of the emergency allotments from the COVID increase go out. So we'll see SNAP participants have a little bit less in their pocketbooks in March, while Farm Bill consideration is very much underway and those conversations are ongoing. So that's something we're keeping a close eye on. There are a couple of other programs that are specific to the dairy industry that I know Dave talked about as well. So that's big picture on the legislative front. But of course, that's not the only thing that we keep an eye on, because the administration has a huge say in what programs that the Farm Bill and other legislation authorize actually look like on the ground. So to narrow a little bit more in on some of the things that directly impact the industry, we're looking at a number of items on the regulatory agenda. And I think this very much ties into the big picture efforts to improve nutrition security, to improve public health outcomes, and that's sort of the auspices by which many of these sort of routine updates are happening, but it's very much under that lens, and I think guided by previous focus on nutrition and nutrition outcomes. So a couple of things to put on your radar if they're not already there that we're keeping a close eye on. The program that supports women, infants, and children, WIC, is a program that's also supplemental like SNAP, and USDA is required to look at that program to make changes based on shifts in public health concerns, nutrients of concerns, things like that, but also taking into account cultural dietary habits that may have shifted, as well as the latest nutrition science. And USDA is undergoing this process right now. So they're in the proposed rulemaking phase. Comments are due next month. And this is very much based on a report. The changes that they've made is very much based on a report that the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine published that updated the food package. And we're seeing in this package that USDA has proposed cutting the amount of milk in the packages, which if you think about the population that serves, you can just sort of make leaps about the impact to the bottom line. And I know Dave has a bit more on that too, but this is one area that USDA is making their mark on kind of nutrition. And one of the things that they've put front and center in that package, and in addition to increasing whole grain requirements, is cutting the amount of milk and somewhat of cheese as well. So that's something to keep an eye on kind of the regulatory front. There's also another proposed rule that will be coming our way on the school lunch program. So USDA sets the standards for what goes on those school meal trays. And they update those regularly as well. The last time it was updated was 2012, and you may recall some of the chatter and dialogue around that as it was controversial then. There's a temporary standard that they put in place during COVID right now that goes through the next school year, so ending in 2024. but they're looking at a longer term standard that will be permanent. And one of the main drivers of that is consistency with the dietary guidelines for Americans. And so you will imagine that they will be looking at things like sodium and how to achieve sodium reduction targets that are happening in other agencies, as well as added sugar, which would impact, you know, chocolate milk and flavored milk, as well as milk fat levels. So these changes will be proposed. There will be an opportunity to comment on them as well, but very much impacts what goes on the school lunch tray. And then I mentioned the dietary guidelines. I would just note that we are somehow already back into the dietary guidelines process, and it is underway right now, which impacts all of the federal feeding programs. The dietary guidelines target date to be done is for the 2025 year. And there are a number of other initiatives that are happening across the federal government, including at FDA on sodium, like I mentioned, on what can bear a healthy label. So there's a number of things that are happening that the agencies can look at to try and achieve some of the goals that were outlined at the big conference that happened in the fall. So we have a number of things that are happening both in the hunger space and the nutrition space, and it's certainly going to be an incredibly busy year ahead in this space, which all of these programs very much impact the dairy industry, what items are available to be shared with consumers, which ones are not, and overall resources going towards nutrition programs. So certainly things to keep an eye on, and happy to answer any questions that might come up in the next few minutes. Thanks, Corey.
Thank you so much, Barbara. We're going to, a reminder that to our audience that you can enter questions into the GoToWebinar control panel. Just type it in here, and our producers here will get those ready for our panelists. Before hearing from Andy Novakovic, let's go to our final poll question. The final poll question is, what is the balance in the U.S. House of Representatives, 222 Republicans and 212 Democrats, and even 217 split, or 222 Democrats and 212 Republicans, or none of the above? So if you've been listening closely here, you should get a good score on this one. We'll give everybody about 5 more seconds before we reveal the answer to that poll question. So if Caitlin wants to go ahead and show what the audience got here, we're running at 86%. There's 212 Republicans and 212 Democrats, and that's certainly a razor-thin margin for the Republicans, and it's one of the many reasons it took 15 votes to elect the Speaker for the House of Representatives in the 118th Congress. It also indicates how challenging it will be to move legislation forward in the next 2 years. We welcome Cornell University's Professor Emeritus Andy Novakovic back to Dairy Livestream. Andy's a regular commentator, and he's working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture these days as an expert consultant, and that is an official title at USDA. Andy, there are so many areas that could be addressed, but the larger question is, what are the areas that we might actually see action on for dairy?
Yeah, that's a good question. As all the other speakers have pointed out, getting something done in 2023 is by no means an easy guess or automatic for a variety of reasons. I think the other thing, Corey put together a really good panel in the sense that if you said, raise your hand if you're interested in ag and food policy, all three of these people would raise their hand. But look at the diversity of topics that they've talked about. I'm like on page 5 of my yellow notepad of, you know, issues to keep track of here. What I'd like to do is not so much give a sort of a A to Z presentation, but talk about some of the context and maybe offer a few tidbits. And in that process, I'll get to Corey's question about what might we see, what are the more likely things that might happen. One of the things that I think about a lot is, what is the context, the bigger context in which these conversations will occur? You know, if the economy was booming and inflation was trivial and, you know, trade was great and, you know, everything you could think of was wonderful, we'd have quite a different discussion than if things are feeling in much the other direction. I'm not the one who's going to say the sky is falling in by any stretch of the imagination, but 2023 is going to be a difficult year economically. There's a lot of debate among macroeconomists about, are we going to have a recession? If we are, how deep is it going to be, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, I'd say that's a bet that a lot of economists would take, that there will be one, but maybe not one that's so deep. Cost of living is still an issue. It's especially an issue if you're a low-income family. The job market actually looks pretty good. Those indicators are improving. There's going to be a lot of talk about budget and what government can afford, but actually the current state of expenditures versus outlays and the projections for 2023 are not that bad. We're kind of back on track. We had huge pandemic expenditures that are over. And so the budget, you know, it's not balanced, but it's nowhere near as dire looking. We're going to have a high cost of investment. You know, a lot of the things that Dave talked about, and Charlie for that matter, are things that don't get corrected without spending money on investing in infrastructure and investing in various business activities. I'm sure that anybody, whether they're a farmer or involved in a business elsewhere down the supply chain, who's listening to this, can tell their own stories about, gosh, I'd really like to expand or do this or improve or replace, but cost of money is a deal. What does that mean? That means there's going to be a lot of grumpy people, and there's going to be politics that right now seems to be tilting and has been more towards the politics of division than the politics of cooperation. There's a 2024 election that everybody wants to win, and so the question is going to be, what do I push in order to have my guys win the election? And it's sure, it's the president, it's every representative, it's a whole bunch of senators, it's the people in state houses. So you mix all that up in a pot, and it starts you thinking this is going to be a tough year to do something, to even agree what the problem is, but even more so agree what the solution to the problem is. That, I think, frames a lot of questions, but certainly has impact on dairy. It's also important, and I think Charlie in particular highlighted this, to remember that there are some things that can't be done without legislation. That means the United States Congress. You know, the US president can say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, but the United States president doesn't get to write laws. The United States president and the people that work for him only get to implement the laws that Congress has created. So if you want to do something fundamentally different that you don't already have a law to do, the Congress is going to have to create it. And there's quite a few things that we talk about that don't get done without legislation. Labor policy and immigration in particular would be the familiar example. That's been stuck for probably a couple decades, and it won't get unstuck without a legislative action. Regulatory, Secretary Vilsack has said repeatedly, we would love to have a federal order hearing as long as you guys can come forward singing Kumbaya. Well, that's not easy. And Lord knows folks have tried, and I think tried genuinely, but I think that's still the refrain. We do have a hearing in the cooking on the stove for the three Southeastern orders, a little easier to sing off the same page of the hymnal in a region as opposed to the whole country. But when we start looking at make allowances, pooling requirements, different ideas about incentives to move milks, there's a variety of other sort of ideas that I'm going to say are kind of tweaking ideas that have been pushed out there. Getting a sense of cohesion around a package of things is not so easy on a national level. Having said that, I think a regulatory action is probably more likely to occur than a legislative action, in no small part because you don't get into the political issues in the executive branch because everybody works for Joe Biden. The harder issue is getting the industry to reasonably come together towards something that looks like a consensus. There are a number of issues that I think a lot of us sort of think about as dairy policy, but they have really different textures. Charlie covered a long list, and I'm not going to waste your time by repeating them, but there's a number of those things that are genuinely ag committee issues. Dairy margin coverage, Dairy RP or LGM Dairy. Those sorts of things are front and center farm bill stuff. There are some other things, though, that are super, super important that both Dave and Charlie mentioned that I have nothing to do with the Ag Committee. The Ag Committee doesn't have what's called jurisdiction. So labor issues, transportation issues, environmental issues, Ag Committee may play some minor role around the edges, but most of the action on those sorts of issues comes from somebody else because they have jurisdiction, not the Ag Committee. Ag Committee can talk to those people. Sometimes they actually kind of get invited to be sort of at the table in the back row, but it's not their main thing. So some of those farmer level and processor level issues might be policy issues, but not necessarily ag policy or farm dairy policy issues. One thing that I wanted to also mention is there's a number of folks who are talking about issues that kind of sound a little like federal order issues, but they're really not. I'm going to put them under a heading called fairer competition, more fair competition. Concerns about transparency and how contracts are created and enforced and how widely they're known and the extent to which this guy gets a special deal and other people don't and all of that sort of competitive rule stuff. There's nothing in the Agricultural Marketing Agreements Act that gives the federal order folks any authority to deal with those issues. Whether they agree with the criticisms or not, that's just not something that they're empowered to deal with. There are some other laws that relate to the meat industries and fruits and vegetables, the Packers and Stockyards Act and the Perishable Agricultural Commodities Act, that actually do have that kind of structure and are actually Farm Bill Ag Committee items. So one could imagine a dairy version of PSA or PACA, but boy, that's probably a bit of a heavy lift given the politics of the day and maybe wouldn't be viewed as the highest priority. Not obviously for me to decide, but something to think about. The other thing that I think is worth thrown into the mix is the United States government is not the only government that gets involved in these things. State government is playing a role. On the labor issue, states don't have much to do with immigration policy, but they have a lot to do with worker rules and things like overtime pay, sick leave, holidays, work hours, 40-hour week, whatever. And we're seeing a number of states that are working on that. And it's been very challenging for dairy farmers in California and New York and other places to deal with this. And, you know, maybe your state is less likely to do that than California or New York, but it's a domino that I think we need to think about and to recognize that states have roles in environmental rules and a variety of things that impact dairy and are might be more likely to get involved on some stuff than the federal government. Along those lines, you know, not everything's going to be done by government. There's a whole lot going on that's private initiative. Dairy cooperatives are doing a lot to try to better coordinate production with sales. Not always a real happy outcome for members of those cooperatives, but it's a point worth making that this is happening. Price and income risk programs, private industry has been at a lead in that. Dealing with labor markets and recruiting workers and retaining workers and doing the things that are necessary to get workers into plants and into trucks and onto farms has a lot to do with private initiative. So-called environmental initiatives. We're going to see a lot more action by private companies saying they're going to do something, not because some government agency required them to do something. That's already happening. And we can debate whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, but it's part of the mix of things that are out there. So with all of that thrown on the table, Corey, what's likely to occur? I think we're going to see a lot of this private action that we're talking about. That means be involved in your organization, try to know what's going on, and to the extent that you think you have an idea, be involved in how those develop as much as you can. be involved in state government issues, because there are a number of things that are likely to occur there. And obviously you can assess that for your own state in which you live or operate. Be engaged and understand that there are some things that Congress can do and there are some things Congress can't do. There are some things ad committees can do, some things they can't do. There's something your representative can or cannot do. Be, you know, understanding of those limitations. Understand what has to be done in a legislative environment, what has to be done in a regulatory environment, so you have an understanding of what levers need to be pushed. I think private initiatives and state initiatives are a lot more likely to get traction. Doing anything at the federal level legislatively is going to be a tough lift, but I think we all have to do what we think is right and best and not give up on that process for sure. Regulatory is a lot more likely to result in something, but it really needs a lot of hard work by industry to be able to come forward with some coherent idea and not just say, I'm mad as hell, do something, but to say, this I think would be a specific way to deal with an issue. So I'm looking forward to questions. Corey, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Speaking of things that are in the Farm Bill, a number of people brought up DMC, dairy margin coverage on the producer front, and DRP, dairy revenue protection. That DMC sign-up extension was extended to January 31st of this year for dairy producers. And given the market situation, if you haven't signed up, you should really consider that. When Charlie talks about lifting the, maybe in the next farm bill, lifting the pounds of milk, 60% of farmers currently participate in DMC, but it only covers 20% of the milk because of that roughly $5 million cap. And then when it comes to dairy revenue protection right now, any wanting time, those contracts cover 30 to 35% of the milk. We're gonna go to speed round here, and I'm gonna pick the commentator that I think can best answer this question. And if anyone else wants to jump in, do so. But Charlie, we're gonna send the first question to you. It comes from a dairy farmer. And this dairy farmer asks, is and specific maybe to the situation in the Southeast orders, getting milk there to serve the fluid market. Is there any discussion on further enhancing programs to removing water from fluid milk to make transportation from positive areas to deficit areas easier? Charlie?
This is a speed round, so I can answer pretty quickly that they're looking at any option possible to make it easier to supply the fluid market in the Southeast.
And I'm going to ask this question to everybody, and another audience member comes in here, you know, and we knew that would be the case in some of our comments here, given the political climate, but this audience member says, this is an interesting political environment, but let's keep in the good fight. And so he's asking for a little bit of what, you know, Andy talked about that a little bit, what we could do, keep up the good fight on evidence-based programs and support the unprecedented portfolio in rural agriculture and infrastructure and education, and how we can be positive on the environmental and health food issues. So 30 seconds to each of you. We're going to go in the order that you joined the broadcast. So Charlie, talk about some positive things in the areas that you're working on in 30 seconds that we can really move forward.
Well, I mean, positive things, just bringing the labor shortage to the forefront and focusing attention on that. And you know, every time we do that, we convince more members of Congress that this truly is a crisis that needs to be resolved. I've described immigration reform as the most difficult political issue of our time. And that's the challenge that the dairy industry has to overcome. In order to be able to get some relief from the legislature.
Dave.
So a positive thing we could do is prevent USDA from moving forward with this WIC rule, which has substantial dairy cuts in that program, 20% cuts. It's a gallon and a half milk a month. We did a poll with Morning Consult recently, 534 WIC participants. 76% said they're very concerned about these cuts actually going through, and 20% of the poll participants said that they would drop out of the WIC program if USDA follows through with these cuts. So our industry at all levels needs to come together over the next month and try to do what we can to convince USDA to reverse course and restore the dairy component in the WIC rule.
Barbara?
I would say half of Congress, or half of the House at least, has never voted on a farm bill. So there's tremendous opportunity to teach, to share stories, to talk about the work that you all do, and to shape opinions about that work, also to provide additional clarity and context. So I think there's a lot of folks that probably think milk comes from the grocery store. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity to share insights.
And if I may add, Barbara, and just on top of that, and Charlie and Dave and Andy all know that, you know, if a dairy producer or a dairy processor, all that's in a dairy industry, take time and go to Congress, and an issue that we went there for didn't pass, it's a continual education journey. And sometimes it's a short race, and sometimes it's a marathon. But the time you take to do that is well worth it. Andy, same question to you.
Trust, responsibility, influence. Those are my three comments. Guys with white lab coats are not going to solve this problem. If you thought that, then we'd all have vaccination shots. The reality is, trust is more important than scientific evidence, because scientific evidence is not unidirectional. It's not just like everybody says exactly the same thing. And a lot of people believe what they want to believe. I worked the entire adult life for a university, so I'm not saying science isn't unimportant, but it is second to trust. So this, I think, is a key thing. You have to establish, you have to be trustworthy before you're going to be believed when you say X, Y, or Z. And just trotting out some group of guys in a white coat and say, go talk for me, is not going to be the final answer to this issue. Number two, responsibility. We have to be willing to accept responsibility for things that we do when there's truth behind that. Cows add methane into the environment. That's a reality. Are there soil issues with some of agriculture? Are there water issues with some of agriculture? Yeah, there are. Follow accepting that responsibility with a solution, saying, this is what I'm doing about it. And agriculture, not just dairy, has a ton of excellent things to say after it says, sure, I am willing to take responsibility for what I do, and here's what I'm doing to deal with those issues. The third thing is influence. Badgering some guy that doesn't really like you in the first place to give you his vote probably isn't going to be real successful. What we need to do is make sure that we influence the people that guy does listen to, or gal. And so this is as much a public conversation as it is a governmental conversation.
We're going to continue in speed round here. This question is probably best for Charlie, perhaps Dave, and Andy. When Secretary Vilsack says we need consensus before moving forward, and of course this audience member is paraphrasing, does that mean consensus among dairy farms, consensus among dairy farmers and dairy processors, consensus amongst dairy farmers, consensus among dairy processors, or consensus about both dairy farmers and dairy processors? Charlie, you get the first crack at that one.
My impression of that is that they're looking for consensus between producers and processors both. I will point out, as has been pointed out repeatedly every time the subject comes up, it's farmers who have a vote. So that's where we are at this point right now. But my impression is that the department is looking for consensus throughout the industry, not just in the farmer contingent.
Dave?
I would just add to that. I agree with what Charlie said. I think the department, and Andy can speak to this probably more directly than either Charlie or I, but the department, I think, is not expecting processors and producers to show up with the same exact number before they initiate any kind of a federal order process. What I think the department would like to see is some consensus on what the scope of any hearing ought to address. And I think those are the kinds of issues that the industry has been talking about for some time now and will continue to talk about for some time. And we'll probably have to use the federal order process at some point to get to the ultimate answer. But I think consensus is very much something that we all work toward, and we'll see whether how close we can get before we enter into that process. But Andy may have a more direct perspective given his role at USDA.
So Andy, yeah, and Andy also has a little bit of a fence around him because of his role at USDA. But I would say a key thing to keep in mind is the Agricultural Marketing Agreement Act requires the United States Department of Agriculture to balance its decisions on federal order rules to be equitable across the supply chain for farmers, for consumers. Charlie's 100% right. Farmers are the only one that gets to vote. But that doesn't mean if all farmers agree that they could come into their processor's office, beat them with a stick and rob the safe, USDA is going to say, no, that's not really good. So it has to be a balance. It has to look like a reasonable balance. And of course, that's not easy to do, but it has to have some kind of scratch and sniff test on that. I think it's also true that there are some issues that feel more like a producer issue, like how do you split up a pool? There are some issues that feel a little more like processor issues, like should yogurt be in class one? And so USDA might think of something as this, we need to pay attention to processors, especially for this, or farmers, especially on that. But the key thing is there has to be some kind of balance. So all the voices are important. All the regions are important, big and small, and in between is important. You know, you don't have to agree on every chapter and verse, but if you're wildly in disagreement, you can't expect Solomon to pull out his sword and say, I'll just split the baby in half. The USDA is not going to get in that game.
So with that, we've reached the top of the hour, and that's all the time we have for today to answer questions. Let your friends and work associates know that Dairy Livestream episodes will be archived on the Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel and podcast channels tomorrow morning, Thursday, and links will be available in the Hordes Dairyman Intel e-newsletter from this webcast. On behalf of Andy Novakovic, Barbara Patterson, Charlie Garrison, and Dave Carlin, I'm Corey Geiger, your host. Thank you for joining us today. We wish you all a good day. Goodbye, everyone.